welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 277 of the slightly gainy Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford.
How are you, Sean? I'm good. Are you echoing? Or are you?
I'm not echoing. No, I just don't want it to be too distorted at all. This microphone's having a it's playing up a bit at the moment. But we're getting some. We've bought some new kit, haven't we?
We have.
Royal We.
The Royal We. So I've been playing cameras. So we're going to have a Mevo, so we can do. Do you say vlogging?
Vlogging is some people
the vlog cast.
Yeah. Video live streaming. Who knows,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, so we're going to step up our game.
Yeah, it's time, isn't it?
Does that mean we've got to do clothes and makeup?
Well, I was thinking that last night, actually. Do I need to start, getting a more regular haircut? And
you have to have a shave.
And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll do some tests.
Yeah.
Now, we're looking 4K.
The cameras have a microphone on them, but I don't know how effective it is.
Mr. Audio, man. You've got all that rigged kit. I have no clue about it.
So we need to have a mixing desk in here and everything. Right?
Ooh, probably. Could do. Yeah. But we're going to do it right, eh? We're going to do it right. We're talking about... What are we talking about? Personality disorder?
Well...
Or disorders of various kinds?
We've had an email, haven't we?
Yeah.
So the email suggests... The person involved has a variety of conditions that obviously we've never met, we don't know. So and the issues that are described are avoidant personality disorder with a bit of borderline personality disorder as well.
And DPD, dependent personality disorder.
Avoidant personality disorder.
Yeah, interesting stuff. We'll come on to this shortly. The listener emailed us in, and we love getting your emails if there's something in particular you're struggling with or you think we should discuss.
Yeah.
So if you go to liveinthepresent.co.uk, you can contact us. We're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as well. And you sign up for our mailing list, you'll get some free meditation files, you get a discount code for the book, and you'll also get this little message sent to you like a day after you've received everything, just kind of asking how you are and what you're up to and... Not what you're up to. We're not that concerned.
Your bank details, your PIN number. Yeah.
No, anything in particular you might be struggling with right now. So, and reply to that email with something, and we use that information as the basis for this show quite often, do we?
Yeah. Very much.
So, how have you been up to, Sean? What's going on?
Well,
you just got Mevo written there.
Yeah. Just it's the whole idea of things need to change. I'm starting to do. Online training with the Middle East, so
the whole Middle East,
the whole of the Middle East, yeah,
trying to inject democracy into
them. They're going to have a massive screen right in the middle of the
They've got that already, haven't they, with the leaders over there?
So I'm trying to get it sorted out so I can do a decent lectures and presentations and seminars and stuff. And the trick is making them interactive so that although I'm here and they're there, they can actually respond. So we can have an interactive, which is fun. So different programs. So certainly on a program called WebEx, which means I can see them, they can see me, and I can use a PowerPoint in the middle.
Presentations and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So lots of fun.
Yeah, we're learning lots at the moment, hey?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll crack on with this week's show.
You haven't said what you've been doing.
Oh, me?
What have you been doing? Come on.
I haven't had time to think about that. I haven't even thought about a resource for later on. I'm losing it, aren't I? Mm-hmm. What have I been doing? Just usual, man. Cycling around. I'm getting deeper and deeper into the world of active travel and safer streets and cycling and...
Do you think you're getting a reputation on the Wirral for being the bike man?
The bike man. I think I'm getting there, yeah.
I think you get it, because people keep saying, oh, Ed, yeah, he's into bikes, isn't he?
I saw you out the other day, furiously cycling. People are starting to email me now and invite me going to a course at Liverpool Uni tonight. Some researchers want to talk to me about 20-mile-an-hour zones in towns and cities and my thoughts on all that stuff. So people are actually asking for advice now. Got some good contacts at the police.
Uh-huh. So you're becoming a spurt.
A spurt.
An expert.
Oh, an expert. I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, though. I'm quite excited by it all, actually.
Yeah.
is.
I was described as an expert once, and someone said to me, "You know what an expert is?" No, what's that? X is the indefinite article, and a spurt is a drip under pressure. So, thank you.
Quite like that. So yeah, it's all go, man. It's just emails going on left, right, and centre. But it's exciting stuff. Right. So I'll read out the chunk of the email we had from our listener. I won't say the name, just in case.
Yeah.
But my biggest thing holding me back right now is anxiety and codependency. I have avoidant and dependent personality disorder. I'm desperately wanting to change my life after suffering immensely for the past 20 years. Whew, so that's pretty serious stuff,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Prior to this email, I was unaware that avoidant and dependent personality disorders were actual things.
Right.
But you know, when you start typing into Google and it fills out the rest of the the sentence for you.
There is a problem that I want to flag here, and it's that in our society we have this need to label things and to give something a name. So that if you see a bird, you don't go, "Oh, that's a pretty bird." What you do is you say, "Oh, what's that called?" Because we have this need to name things.
I would just say that's a nice bird. I might.
Yeah, but you're odd then, aren't you? Okay. You'd ride bikes where other people drive cars.
Yeah.
You know, you're odd. 20 miles an hour, come on. The thing called the DSM, which is it's the diagnostic manual that's used in psychiatry and psychology. So everything gets a code name. Yeah, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. It's like we think of bipolar, but there's lots of different forms of bipolar that have different codes.
Right.
And the idea is that if someone does a diagnosis here, they can code it so that if the person goes to another country, anywhere in the world, the person can look at the coding diagnosis to know what the person's suffering from. So it's like a global language. The problem is, every time a new version of the DSM comes out, we're on DSM-5 at the moment, more and more things start to get coded. So things that we would consider as normal behaviour become coded as disorders. You know, it's like bereavement is not a disorder, it's a process.
Yep, okay.
The problem is, once we give people labels, that label then limits the person, because the person then starts to become the label and they allow themselves to be limited by the description that they're told of the symptoms that they've got.
Yep.
And they may even be told by certain therapists that need to be taken out on the street and flogged how they can't do this and they can't do that. So everything becomes limited down into this box with this title. Yeah.
So
that's my first thing.
So what's your point?
the point that I'm making is that once we start saying, "You know what, I'm a depressive," well, guess what, you are.
Yeah.
Because you say it, you repeat it, you keep playing it out.
Yeah, it's a lot of attraction stuff, right?
Yeah, and that's true for any office in any situation, yeah? Now, obviously, some people do have deficits, and those deficits might be in genetics, they might be in the brain structure, they may be in all kinds of parts of the system, the way that the internal chemistry and the endocrine system is working, whatever. You know, if someone's pancreas doesn't work properly, we become diabetic. Yeah, it's working all through our system.
Science, right? Yeah.
So the thing is, yes, we need to understand where we are and what we're up to, but we don't need to allow ourselves to be limited by the labels that people give us, right?
Okay.
Which takes us to the mindfulness bit, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the kind of disorders that are described here, where you've got the avoidant and the codependency and the potential borderline personality disorders, are disorders that will be helped with certain kinds of medications, mainly antidepressants.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you need to have the talking therapies alongside. And there is evidence that the two work together. But there is evidence also, and I put a link up in my results to some of the research, where mindfulness has been used with borderline personality disorder. And the research to date is showing that it can have a profound effect in helping and minimising some of the symptoms, but inevitably, as it says at the end of research document, and it should, more research needs to be done on bigger cohort of people.
Okay, well, when I first read this email, it kind of made me think, because the listener mentions that she's suffering with, well, avoidant and dependent disorders, and that kind of made me think, hang on a minute, isn't that a bit of like an oxymoron? You're kind of avoiding people, but you're also depending on them massively as well.
But a codependency could be, say, you're an alcoholic and I'm not, but your alcoholism feeds into my need to look after you, and your need to be alcoholic feeds into your need to be with me so I can look after you. It's like we develop a codependency with all kinds of things that are going on. When you get dependency disorders where people need to be dependent, they need to be looked after, they need someone else to check out that they're okay, which can be set against the opposite, which is avoidance. You know, so I'm going to avoid you. But if the two are switching about, I can at one moment be saying, I need you, I need you, I need you. And then the next moment I could be saying, go away, go away, go away. Yeah, which can be very confusing for the other person.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that makes it immensely difficult for people that have those types of disorders to maintain relationships generally, but also maintain social relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And also when you get the anxiety that comes with this kind of disorder, to go into a party might be terrifying. You know, to even go to a supermarket could be terrifying.
Yeah, well, so I'm sure a listener is well aware of this definition, but I wasn't aware at all of avoidant personality disorder, which on the Psychology Today website is defined as, explained as, many of us struggle with shyness, but approximately 2% of the population suffer from avoidant personality disorder. Extreme shyness and fear of rejection make it difficult for some people to interact socially and professionally. And then it lists a few common signs of avoidant personality disorder, like being easily hurt by criticism or disapproval, not having many close friends, reluctant to become involved with people on the back of that, avoidance of activities or occupation that involve contact with others, which is a lot of professions, I would say. Shyness in social situations, exaggeration of potential difficulties, it's just quite an interesting one. Showing excessive restraint in intimate relationships, feeling socially inept, inferior or unappealing to other people, and unwilling to take risks or try new things because they may prove embarrassing. So, yeah, it can really hold you back, these things.
But that kind of avoidant personality disorder as described, which is, again, it's the issue about labels and putting things in boxes, if you add into that the idea that someone who's suffering in that way has got one person who they can relate to, who does look after them, who does, you know, do their shopping, maybe gives them a cuddle, whatever it is, then you get the dependency issue feeds in.
So that's how they can kind of cross over.
But then also the person who is being used as the dependent is somebody who ends up supporting the problem as well, rather than the person.
Okay.
So it's a bit like when you've got a feeder and you've got somebody, when you see those films of somebody who's got so large that they can't even get off the bed. Yeah, and you know that they've only been, that they managed to get that big because someone else has fed them. Yeah, because if it had been left to them, at the point where they couldn't get off the bed because they were that big, they would have died. Yeah, so there is a kind of a codependency between the feeder and the fed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for us to end up supporting people's problems rather than supporting the solution.
When we're dealing with this kind of disorder, then avoidant, are we aiming for the patient, if that's the right word, the client of yours, to become, to kind of manage it because it's just something that is in part of them, or are we trying to get to the point where they are better at going out and going to parties or getting a job with where they work?
I think that that's going to be individual, but accepting the fact that we're all mad. Yeah, I don't get with this idea about there are people that are normal and people that are not. It's just a series of spectrums, and we're all on those spectrums. We all have avoidant personalities in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does. Yeah, and it's like, how far do you go up the spectrum before it becomes recognised? Oh, you've got an issue there. What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all got obsessive compulsive disorder. There's times when we're all psychopathic and insensitive to other people. You know, it's we've all got it. So the issue isn't about can you cure it, it's more a case of can I mindfully take charge of my system so that I'm in control of my system, yeah. My system's not in control of me.
Yeah, I guess that's what the end result should be, that you're in control.
Yeah, so as much as you can be. And some people, it's going to be, I'm in control sometimes. It's a bit like people that have bipolar disorders. The biggest problem for them is maintaining their medication, because in, as much as when they're balanced, they're going to say, no, of course I'm going to carry on taking my medication. Lots and lots of people with bipolar, when they are having a good run, there'll be a part of them somewhere inside that says, I don't need this medication anymore, and they'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the classic with bipolar, that people will last long, 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 long time, and then they'll drop off. And then it's like you've got to get back on again, you know. But this is the bit that's important, I think, that because someone has a label and they have an apparent disorder, it doesn't mean that they can't function as a person. And I worked for many years, long time ago, with a social worker who was bipolar and was on higher levels of medication than the clients that he was looking after. Right, but because he was a controlled bipolar, it wasn't a problem. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like for all of us getting to a point where what's our balance, what's our equilibrium, how can we function?
Yeah,
yeah.
In terms of when you're starting to treat this in a person, or you're dealing with a client, and you're kind of rolling back the years to figure out where it started, are you looking for somewhere where it started, or is this just something that we're born?
Not necessarily. One of the problems with a lot of disorders like this is that if you decide to go digging and there has been some kind of primary issue, some kind of assault or abuse, whatever, by digging out, very often you make the situation worse.
It's like The Thing, that movie, The Thing. They went and dug out this thing that's been frozen in the Arctic for thousands of years, and it came, and it woke up, and it got
what
us.
What was it?
The Thing.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. Yeah.
It was a nasty thing.
Oh, it was so nasty. Yeah. You haven't seen the movie?
No, no.
Oh, man, yeah, it's another one. I need to get you to
it. I need to see that, yeah. Yeah. I need to have a movie first.
Yeah. Careful what you go around digging up, basically.
I mean, in analytical work, you'd reckon that most people have got about 20 boxes in their attic of unresolved stuff. Yeah. Now, most people never have to deal with those boxes. Yeah. If people go into traditional analysis, which in the good old days would have been one session or an hour, 5 days a week for maybe 5 years. Yeah, that kind of thing. And people would clear their cupboard out. But when you meet somebody who's cleared their cupboard out, they are a bit odd. They are a bit odd. They've ceased to live in the world of normality, and they seem a bit traumatised by it all.
And like someone that's been in a war zone or something like that, that's come back from Iraq.
But when people are... the reason people put stuff in the attic, in boxes, is because they're not up to dealing with it. Either they can't deal with it, but they want to deal with it, but it ends up being in the attic.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's how they survive. And then they go into some kind of therapeutic process, and the therapist decides, hey, come on, let's go in the attic and clean all the boxes
up. Let's have some fun up there.
Yeah. And you can end up creating more problems than you started with. Yeah. So you have to be very, very careful with that kind of stuff. And people that have the kind of disorders that are described here, if you dig too deep, you can create more and more problems rather than solving things. Yeah,
so moving on to DPD, dependent personality disorder. Individuals with DPD feel a long-standing need to be taken care of by someone. They feel they fear of being abandoned or rejected, and therefore engage in dependent and submissive behaviours to engage caregiving from others.
But that's what I mean about if you can find a person who can give you that support, that's okay if the person is awake enough to support you and not the problem, because they can end up just reinforcing the problem again. So you become more and more dependent and less independent.
Okay.
Yeah. Phew. So it is kind of tough stuff. And it's tough stuff because of all the labelling, but also because we as a society are not good at talking about it.
Mm.
So it becomes hidden. And people aren't open about their problems.
Yeah, and we don't know if our listener is. Well, she said that she's suffered for 20-odd years with this stuff, so hopefully she's had some kind of professional help at some point. But I've sent you a message on to you, so you can maybe reach out and say hello. But
yeah, I will do.
A combination of therapy and medication needed, perhaps, for this kind of thing?
Yes, yeah. And again, the idea of therapy 20 years ago, 30 years ago, was like, okay, you're a nut job if you need to go and see a therapist, whereas these days, lots of people do it.
Yeah.
You know, we know that 1 in 4, some places 1 in 3, people would need support at some point in their life.
Okay.
You know. You and me included.
Of course. Well, we get our weekly dose, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
I get a free psychotherapy session every week.
What do you mean it's free? You wait till you get the bill.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay. Anything else? Or do you want to... You got
no, I'm okay. I put the resource in, which is that piece of research that I think is worth having a look at. That looks at mindfulness and its effect on borderline personality disorders.
Yeah.
Like I say, it said they need more research with a bigger cohort of people. But it does indicate, and this is the bit that's important, when in psychiatry you get in a situation where people will say, psychopath can't change, psychopath can't get better. Well, you know what, they can. They may not get better, but they can improve where they are. Yeah? And it depends on how they're worked with. It's too easy to medicate people, put them in the chemical straitjacket, and leave them stuck somewhere with the label.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you do have active therapies going on, people in all kinds of conditions can make movement, they can progress, they can learn, they can develop. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of links that I'll stick in more from the side for people that might be listening, that the little alarm bells are ringing, maybe for people they know or themselves, that this stuff might sound a bit familiar. And I'll mention The Thing, the movie. It's a classic, early 80s. I wouldn't say it's a horror movie, but yeah, supernatural.
It makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
It's a really cool, like, blimey, but yeah, it just reinforced that point about just be careful about what you go digging around for.
Yeah.
You don't know what's out there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm. And it's, as long as you do any kind of therapy that you engage in, it has to be with someone who's appropriately trained. That doesn't mean say they necessarily have to have a piece of paper, but they have to be appropriately trained and somebody's appropriately responsible.
Cool.
You do have to be careful with your own inner being before you give it to other people.
Yeah. All right. Don't just take the word of two fellas on the self-help podcast for it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Go speak to some experts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Someone who knows what they're talking about. Yeah.
All right, cool. We'll be back next week for more. Do drop us a line via the website or social media if you want us to discuss anything in particular. liveinthepresent.co.uk. And we're back next week, so take care till then. All right, Sean?
Yep. I'm fine. You
goodbye.
Take care.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.